Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron. That was Karanga by Taisha Tari. And in the studio for our Kairongo segment, I've got Ngaronoa Renata. Good morning.
Ai, kia ora.
Kia ora.
Ata marie e te whānau whānui o Whaingaroa.
And today, what are we talking about today?
Well, as you may realise, or may not, coming up is a very special time in our maramataka, in our calendars in Aotearoa, New Zealand, which pays attention to a cluster of stars called Matariki, and Puanga sits within that story as well. Puanga, which is a star,
yeah,
and is often spoken about in relationship to the cluster Matariki. So that cluster of stars then sits within a constellation called Taurus. As many of you may know, and therefore we're talking about a very specific cluster and paying attention to it, and you go and you may well ask, well, how did that come about and why are we doing that as
Indeed.
A country?
Yeah. Why is it important to Aotearoa?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is it important? Well, it's not only actually important to Aotearoa, New Zealand, but within the Pacific Basin and beyond that, there has always been attention paid to that particular cluster, and it has a variety of names as well, which honour that cluster through cultural observance. So it's not specific, but we seem to have risen up to make a voice and say, actually, we want all of Aotearoa, New Zealand, to be celebrating this in some way as a community, as a village, as a town, as a city, within the cities as well. And what does that look like, and how do we honour that initiative that was placed in our calendars? We're in the second year, by the way.
Yeah, the second year of the New Zealand government making it an official public holiday.
Absolutely. It's
yeah.
quite a milestone.
It is quite significant for like the colonising power to adopt the – it's not just a celebration, it's deeper than that, but to adopt that. Yeah,
I think because our interpretation too of what a celebration is, and then the attachment of people know it, they go, oh, the Māori New Year. And then maybe we have this thing called a celebration, and oh, what's that look like? You know, which is probably not the best way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
It's a time within a natural cycle of constellations as they pass through Ranginui, the night sky, and this particular cluster has significance to us in terms of what we taking a break, reflective time,
yeah,
to think back on the past year and then looking forward to the year ahead and just taking that pause, and that in itself I think is very challenging for us anyway.
Yeah, yeah, it is, because we've talked before about how we've overlaid the Northern Hemisphere's yearly cycle on us here in the Southern Hemisphere, and we're in the middle of the year according to that, and we're working hard, but the physical world around us is telling us it's a different time of year.
Yes, I think we're actually asking ourselves to look again at some of those natural cycles that are right there in front of us that we've never paid attention to, and to ask, well, what does that mean? What am I going to do with that? So Matariki is one of those. Puanga appears first in the northeastern sky.
Yeah.
And then Matariki follows very quickly.
So in the pre-European days, it was when Puanga appeared, that was the sign that you were to start looking for Matariki.
Yes, absolutely. And only certain parts of, like, as you know, of the country will see Puanga as a more visible star during the winter months.
Okay. Takirua. Is that north or south?
It seems to be framed from in Taranaki.
Okay.
They pay attention to Puanga and also in the far north.
Okay, okay,
and
all right.
And Te Tai Tokoro as well as Matariki, which is a... Well, we've been invited to consider that there's 9. All the ancient texts that talk about Matariki as Pylades.
Yeah.
Often refer to Pylades as 7 sisters.
Yeah.
A mother and her 6 daughters. So there's various ways which have expressed that it is the 7 visible stars. But since in very recent times, 2 more have been added to that cluster.
Who decides these things?
I think it's whoever's got the loudest voice.
Who's got the biggest telescope?
I'm not sure that I want to argue with the ancients over this, and I'm happy with 7, but there's definitely 9 that are coming forward.
Okay, yeah.
Adding 2, and you know, but I just would say that 7 is good.
In the official, there must be like official pictures that the government's putting out these days. I'm going to look them up now and see if they have 9 or 7 in them. What's that?
Well, there was the Professor Rangi Mātāmua, who was an astronomer, who has proposed the 2 other stars that have been since added to that cluster.
Okay, I'm looking at basically a photo of the night sky, and it's a bit hard to count because there's all stars of varying brightness, and I can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then there's a double one that might be the 9th. When you see the actual photo of the night sky, you're like, okay, that's actually quite hard to draw a line about what counts and what doesn't count if you're just to look at it and try to count them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to be fair, stars, comets are being found all the time and being named after the person that actually saw them for the first time.
Yeah.
I'm not quite certain on that process of how they become the owner of all the star is named after.
Yeah, we like naming things after ourselves, don't we, in the culture.
Yes. The time of the year is a significant time in terms of that it's more about coming closer together, stopping for a moment, reflective time.
Yeah.
To honour the time, the 12 months before, if you like, that as a time frame of what has reflecting on that, and then those that have passed away in recent times, and then also setting plans for going forward, not so much getting up and actually doing that, but just sitting and having time to put down ideas and share what's possible for the year ahead with those around you.
When do we conventionally do that? I don't know.
we don't.
Yeah, do we just keep on going?
We do. We're quite logged into that eternal. Is that
It feels like it. Yes, that's quite a good word.
Is to keep going, you know, like a...
Carry on
and not take a time to just stop, take a pause and think about how things are, where are we up to, what can we change going forward, what would we like to see as we enter into the next phase. We call it the Māori New Year.
Yeah.
it's named that, but it's not really belong. It doesn't really belong to Māori. The stars don't belong to us.
I imagine
never what, have.
I presume Matariki was, or whatever each culture called it, was a signifier of the new year all around the Southern Hemisphere.
Absolutely.
At certain latitudes. I don't know if it applies up close to the equator or not. I don't understand enough about astronomy, but and that
yeah, absolutely. It had a very significant place within the way that we saw the year before and the year ahead, or the months or the days and those activities, because, yeah, it's going to be pretty hard for us. You know, it's like already the comments about the day, the public holiday that we've just had, most still think of it as the Queen's birthday.
We've had a lifetime of, there's hardly anyone, there's very few people are left alive who remember the previous King's birthday.
And now it's called the King's birthday.
Again, but we've had, what have we had, 70 years of Queen?
Yeah, and how...
I should know, sorry.
How quickly that just... Somewhere it's just changed. Like, nobody questions that, right? But people do have in their minds, like, isn't it the Queen's birthday?
It's such a habit.
But
a reflex.
It's gone through all the different systems that it has to in calendars and been changed just like that before. And nobody questions it, really.
Not for us to question.
No.
Is what we say.
Yeah, but is it his birthday?
Well, I doubt it, no. Because it isn't the same day as... It wasn't the Queen's birthday either. When she was alive, it wasn't actually her birthday. I don't know whose birthday it
getting
was.
Getting in down into...
If we go back far enough, we'll find some monarch where it actually was their birthday. But they just keep the date.
Yeah, where...
Because we like our public holiday in June.
Where Matariki is to do with a very significant cluster of stars, and each star has a personality, or, you know, that's what we do. We've done it since ancient times. We've given Pallades these, we've painted Pallades in so many different ways, throughout history.
And the other significant thing is that it's not the same date, like Easter, it's not the same date each year.
And I think that's really an important, that's probably the key to it, is that because we're working with energetically, the way that the sky is, the night sky is moving, I think that's a really important factor.
And I've just brought up the dates here. They've given the dates for the next 30 years, and last year was the 24th of June. This year is the 14th of July. And 29th of June, 25th of June, 10th of July, 18th of July. So, yeah, it's sort of almost a four-week period through which it might appear.
Yes, yes, or does. It does appear. But we're giving it a bit a more movement. We're not making it a static place in because it suits us. We're actually paying attention to real time.
Oh, what would happen if it lands on the King's birthday? Who wins? I don't know. who wins that? Get your jukes up.
Well, probably not in his lifetime it will be like that, because it's generally moving forward, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I'm looking at a whole list of dates here for the next 30 years, so I can't process that in my head right now.
And I think that that's a great thing that it has been.
Oh, I think it will be. I think that, sorry to interrupt. I think King's birthday will always come before. I don't think Matariki's going to appear that early in the calendar.
Yeah.
That would have been interesting to see the government try to decide which was more important.
Yeah, I think it was very interesting. I would have loved to have been there when, you know, there was unfolding story, and then it was placed within our public holiday system, and it, you know, and it has created. We're still working on it. I believe that we're still trying to figure out as a community here in Whangaroa, for instance, what are we going to do? Are we going to have a very public event on that day, Or are we going to have smaller events that somehow are coordinated so each of us knows what is on and we can go to things? Are there educational workshops available so people can understand what matariki is? Are there waiata that we can learn? Are there, you know, that just understanding what it's all about?
I think if you compare it to something like Anzac Day, like, yes, there are public events, but if you don't go to them, you can still take a moment. You know what it's about. It's very clear. And even if you're someone for whom that's important, even if you don't get there, you could still take a moment to think about it that day. But I think with matariki being so new to the modern culture, I think we need those public events to help people understand.
Yeah, I do, and I would hopefully that we will be able to do something in the streets of of Whangaroa, so that we can keep on educating our community, keep it very localized, and spend time together. Yeah. in a genuine way.
But you say you hope so.
Yeah, well, since the first meeting that we had as part of Raglan Naturally, there has been a post put into the courier asking for those groups and communities who are actually working on having a type of celebration for matariki to let Raglan Naturally know if they need any help or would like us to know about it, would like Raglan Naturally, okay, so we can coordinate.
I think they're trying to reach out to just to see if other things are going on to make sure, I guess, that people aren't doing simultaneous events perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that people know what's happening, have some idea. So that would be great. That would be great to know that, eh?
So that's about 7 weeks, just guessing, 6 or 7 weeks away. Matariki, so we're not saying what's happening at this stage, other than you and I are talking about it.
Yeah. I will be. So within my te reo classes, which are continuing at the Old School Art Centre on Wednesday mornings, and the time has slightly changed from 9:30 till 11:30.
Oh, has it?
Time.
Okay, so it's now 11:30.
9:30 to 11:30.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said you'd change the start from 9:30 to a new start of 11:30. I get it now. Starts at 9:30, finishes at 11:30.
Yeah, which will be a time I will particularly focus on matariki.
Yeah.
And education around matariki, what I understand. I think that's really important to me to be able to do that for those who are interested in understanding more. Import that as the main kaupapa of my te reo classes at the Old School Dance Centre.
And do we know pre-European times how Māori celebrated, that word again, matariki? Like, what form did it take in the community? What happened?
Well, we have to go back and realise that we didn't have the type of transport to connect between Hamilton. There wasn't this daily contact with like a city called Hamilton.
Yeah.
So the pockets of the villages were contained. What am I trying to say?
It's a different time. It was a very different time,
and the connections were extensive. Yes, that's true. But they were also more intimate within the village life, and the extended tribal life of Māori.
Village life was, if you think about the matariki celebration last year, the village life was like that celebration in the sense that we didn't live in kind of isolated pockets or isolated houses, so separate. I mean, I wasn't there for that village life. I've lived in other village life in the island, so I know what it's like. It's much, there's less separation. You're much more together. And I suspect that the Matariki celebration and other celebrations we have are much more like what village life was like all the time, to a degree.
Yeah, I think the whole playing out of ceremonial Matariki in a ceremonial way, and those were, you know, in recent times have been given to kaumātua elders, both male and female,
yeah,
the Whatukura and the Maraikura. That would have been held within the pā by the tohunga and the elders of that village. You know, it wasn't, it had its own sovereignty, so to speak. I think it's quite difficult for us to understand that, because we live already, we call Raglan a village, but we live so separately.
Yeah.
And we rely on, well, radio is one of the forms that we rely on. There are many social media forms to keep us informed about what's happening next door.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas that didn't happen in the village. The village, pre-European, you know, those who needed to know, there was cohesion around what was known. There was much more cohesion and much more regularity around knowing.
I had an experience, like I mentioned before, I didn't really live in a village. My family lived in Tokelau in the islands, and I was the only blonde person in the entire country, and I was a 12-year-old kid. So the little kids were very interested in my hair. How did it get so white? But we actually had a house, like a conventional New Zealand house to live in, a little bit away from the village, but everyone else lived in a really close village. And there were Tokelauans who had spent most of their childhood in New Zealand and had then gone to live back in Tokelau, and they actually found it a bit, the lack of privacy caught them unawares, so they didn't know that's what life was going to be like, where everyone knows everything that's going on. And they said the people would, they'd be in their whale, and people would be walking past and checking out what was going on in their whale. And if they couldn't see what was going on, they'd ask them what was going on. What are you doing? And I compare that to, like, this morning I could see my neighbour out the kitchen window in his bedroom, and I instinctively respected his privacy and looked away.
Yes,
so
yes.
That is, I'm trying to give, like, a practical version that I've experienced where, that shows how different life is now.
Yes, yes, it's somehow you're being nosy.
Yes, yeah, and I would have felt, if he looked up and seen me looking in, I would have felt terrible, like I'd invaded his space.
And yet when you start sharing information by kōrero, speaking to each other, you realise, oh, I didn't know that. And yeah, you feel, I feel, you know, like when I receive something from a friend who speaks to me in person about something in the village, and I said, how come I don't know that? And I realised that I'm not in touch,
yeah,
with the life of the village. And I'm thinking, well, how am I supposed to know that unless we have these places, you know, that we meet regularly, you know, the local cafe. Here in the village, and you have this exchange of information. There's so many fascinating communities within communities that we, unless we come into that space, we don't learn about each other, we don't support each other, because we don't know. Genuinely don't know, because we've been taught that that's being nosy, or somehow we're unsure anymore of whether that information should be shared more globally with each other.
Yeah, we're worried we might be gossiping, or it's appropriate.
I would be, because I don't sit in that space too often, but I do know that when I learn of things, I go, I didn't know that.
I'm in a constant state of, like, I hear a lot of things that are going on in this job, but then I'm also surprised when I hear about stuff I don't know that's going on, and I get caught by surprise by that. But I also have a lot of information. I keep thinking, am I supposed to talk about this? I'm in a constant state of wondering, and yeah.
Yeah, and I think
should I shut up?
Yeah, naturally, and you know, bringing it back to Matariki, I'm hoping that we will gain some more support. That being together is also about sharing stories, particularly the Matariki story or stories, Pūrākau, so that we also invite storylines, storytellers, that our life becomes full of stories as well, not just, I'm not saying that the other things that are going on within our communities are not valuable and we should be know about them. But, yeah, storytelling. Matariki is about storytelling and bigger stories and for us to have story time.
What are the stories that are told? Is it there's the particular stories?
Oh, there's some incredible stories of Matariki, how Matariki actually evolved. In Te Ao Māori and Witi Ihimaira, I'm reading Navigating the Stars right now. It's an incredible story. It's
this is a work of fiction.
No, it's
non-fiction.
Yeah,
how it actually happened.
Yeah, according to Te Ao Māori, but it's also based on his extensive research. Like he's been writing for 50 years. Witi Ihimaira.
Yeah.
And he's wrote some of the most incredible stories for us to you know, breathe into and to create from and to understand, like, wow, that's incredible. I didn't know that. You know, the naming of how these extraordinary creatures within our, we call it mythology, legends, Pakiwaitara, Pūrākau, how these things took place, these events that took place where cosmology, we call it under the general term of cosmology, that may not sit so well within our fundamentalist Christian world because it's not supposed to. It's actually outside of that. It doesn't sit within
Well, they had their own mythology, and I don't mean that in an insulting way and in that it's not a true thing. I just mean they had their own mythology and their own value system that came out of that. And
we have values too that came directly from this these stories, these storylines of kutahitanga, manaakitanga, wairuatanga, kaitiakitanga. And those words are kupu are now embedded within certain storylines coming forward in the contemporary world of taiao and environmental. You know, you often hear reference to kaitiakitanga.
Yeah.
And, you know, you read it and you go, wow, is that what they think kaitiakitanga is? You know, that's a perfect example.
So you're reading this in the papers?
Oh, no, I'm reading reports, very specific report written about the Kaituki walkway. And, you know, I can see my elders saying, you need to say something, you need to speak up, because using poison on a walkway is not manaakitanga for my mother, you know, Papa Tuanuku.
Yeah.
It's just not. Would you put that in your mother's mouth, that poison? You know, and people go, oh, come on, that's going a bit far. And I'm going, no, would you spoon feed your mother, put that poison? You probably know. Well, why are you giving it to Papa Tuanuku? She can't deal with it.
So that's the that's placing Papa Tuanuku in, describing Papa Tuanuku in a way that makes sense in our modern world. By comparing to our mother, like I'm trying to think. Like people say, "Oh, that's a bit shocking," but it is that shocking. That's what you're trying to say. It is shocking.
I'm actually giving a cultural identity here and saying she's always been my mother, and I disagree with this practice that you place under calling manaakitanga. That you are showing manaakitanga for the native trees in the walkway. By feeding the walkway these toxic sprays, how could that possibly be tika, right, the right thing to do? you know.
But if Papatūānuku doesn't hold a place in our view of the world that is like a mother, then it is easy to do.
Absolutely, and then that's what has been so challenging about these cultural ways and value systems. And I think Matariki has the opportunity to really embed back into our, or not embed back, but to encourage us to really understand the depth of those mātāpono, which are values.
Right.
Ancient values, which are not specific only to Māori. They're actually around the world. Indigenous cultures totally lived by them. You know, kotahitanga, kaitiakitanga. Yes, of course you wouldn't. You know, it was unheard of.
Those values must exist because otherwise those cultures would not have lasted, which is they would have destroyed their land base. That's a phrase that I hear people use, and which is what we're doing now in our current modern culture. We're kind of destroying the support structure of our world, the ecological support structure.
Yeah, I'm not sure how the farming community would relate to Matariki as a real signal of stopping and changing. It's an opportunity for all parts of our rural and urban communities to rethink our practices of going forward, you know, the way that we look after not only the human, each other as humans, but non-human, you know, animals, mokai, and the nature, taiao, the environment, time to sit and actually have honest, genuine discussions about how that's looking, what's the way forward.
I tell you what, something that does line up with the way that the farming community works with Matariki, and because we talked in the past, I mentioned before about how we've got the Northern Hemisphere's yearly pattern laid over us down here, but for the farming community, they have spring coming up, and so at the moment, it is kind of a slower time. It's the time of year, like 1st of July is at the time of the year when all the farm sales happen and people swap farms or whatever they've got to do, because spring is coming and that's going to be a very busy time. So I think they are more in contact, obviously, with the patterns of the natural world because they live it.
Yeah, absolutely, I'm sure.
This has never occurred to me before, but it makes sense.
And I shouldn't think they know many things and within their practices why, yeah, this is the time we're going to slow down, you know, we're maybe going to... Maybe the cows are not going to go to the milking shed.
That'll do. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they have stopped or not. I don't know. There are times when they stop.
They rest, you know.
Yeah.
There's a rest.
Or they repair. This is the time of year that a lot of repairs might get done around the farm.
Yes.
I think someone's going to ring soon and tell me I've got it wrong. But I think it is.
Yeah, that's a very big part of our bigger community. Of activities. So looking at all the types of activities that continue, or whether the way forward is to continue that way or to change something, to make an adjustment within. Yeah.
Now, you did say you wanted to talk about Māori language and whangaroa as well. And
yeah,
kind of have been. It's all embedded in what we're discussing.
Yes, yes. And in terms of rungoa and sort of, you know, the reo, just placing it once again before us as a way of going forward, becoming bilingual in the so many different ways that we can continue to achieve that, and what that looks like for us going forward. You know, what is it we want? What sort of magic is it that we want to have in our lives as we embrace this, our Indigenous language, which is an official language of Aotearoa New Zealand.
What do you see as the benefits for embracing bilingualism?
Oh, I don't really need to go into detail about that. There's whole papers you can do at university based on...
Well, yes.
...on the benefits of writers who are non-Māori, who talk about trilingualism as being quite normal, a normal pattern of having languages
when you have access to language, you have access to communication ways of relating to people around the world. You know, most of the world are not don't speak English. That's not that's a mythology. You know, there's plenty of people within our own community who have yet to get English into their rhythm. They still speak their native tongue from where they've come from, mainly China.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think they find it useful to be able to speak English, and that's bilingualism, so that they can get through all the paperwork when they want to travel home to China or or go to Australia even. If you can't, you know, can't access the information, then you're not going to get to Australia.
No, the paperwork is serious.
And it's in English. So that's bilingualism. And there's quite a struggle.
That specific issue is an interesting one. Are they going to create, because the government is officially bilingual and we've started with bilingual signs, or maybe we haven't, depending on which politician you talk to, but that's a whole other story. But is it eventually one day you'll be able to fill out a form in Māori just like you fill it out in English, and the government bureaucracy will be able to cope with it? Is that a future you see? I haven't thought about something like that.
Yeah, the government really isn't my focus in terms of how that unfolds, except that they need to give more money to many fields in terms of, you know, one of the fields in terms of Māori language is actually ensuring that we know our own history in preference to knowing the history of Europe. And that's within that is bilingualism, because there's there's Māori words that you have to know. When you know our own history, then have to know names of people who are not Māori, who are not European, you know. And so there's placing our history forward, and money needs to, the government really just needs to give more money towards making sure that our language survives and flourishes, and just keep pouring money into it so that it has a home, continues to have a home.
I don't know whether I want to bring this up or not, but let's do it. There's some politicians, it's an election year, and there's some politicians who know that they can get a small percentage of votes by objecting to things like bilingual signs and things like that. So that debate is literally happening at the moment, where some politician is saying, oh, it's not safe to drive roads, signs with two languages on them are not safe. if you've ever left the country, you will see plenty of places with signs like that. So it's just politicking. It doesn't bear any relationship to the research and science and reality. But that's where we're at out in the public, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know any politicians like that, because I probably don't really value what they.
No. I don't know them either. I just read about them, unfortunately, and wish I hadn't.
And I think you're right. And I mean, you know, that's petty. That's sort of not really where I put my focus.
Yeah.
Because that's what they want to do, is they're able to create this distrust around what comes out of their mouth is just, you know, not worthy of paying attention to, really.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
The other thing too is it's the last gasp of that attitude, because all around the country there are Pākehā people everywhere trying to learn Māori. They're very enthusiastic about it.
There are Māori trying to learn Māori too, who are, you know, feeling quite, not quite there. We're not there yet.
No, but what I'm saying is that while the politicians are doing those things and they're creating anger and distrust and hatred, the actual community is getting on with their lives and getting on with heading in that direction of being bilingual.
Yes.
And no matter what they do or say, they can't stop that movement. That will just kind of slowly sweep through the population.
That will happen through education, when schools actually place our own history as a priority. In front of the next generation, we don't know our own history. We don't realise what actually happened. We're renaming things like the Māori Wars. There's no Māori Wars.
They weren't Maori wars, and they were musket wars, and they were...
Well, land wars is what they call it officially now.
Yeah, you know, there's different ways of languaging that have not really given what you call a balanced view of how we see our own history.
Maori people at the time probably called it the English Wars. It's like the Vietnam War, and Vietnam's not called the Vietnam War. It's probably called the American War.
Yeah, well, it's like anything. You know, when I work in the field of botany, Wandering Jew. You know, it's totally inappropriate. You know, it's culturally inappropriate.
Yeah.
And there are so many words used within the English language that are derogatory to cultures that we're going through that. We're going through this process and saying, hey, that's not okay. What's that about? I mean, I grew up knowing what Wandering Jew was, but you know, even now I say it. Hopefully, it's the last time I ever say that word.
Yeah.
It's totally inappropriate for the times that we live in. But if we continue to not look for those words within, you know, that's in botany, in the field of botany, of the naming of plants, then yeah, we're not heading in the right direction.
Hopefully that phrase isn't carried through somehow into the Latin name.
Yeah, well, Latinizing things too, because I've done some quite big study on is how we Latinize things too. You know, we're asking for kumaraho to be established within the Latin word because it deserves a place of honour. It's not just a Maori word, it actually has a meaning, a significant scientific meaning. Therefore, there's this whole exchange of like, well, why can't you call it Pomaderis kumaraho?
Yeah, well, there's no reason why they can't.
No.
And there are, I think I've mentioned this before, my daughter's studying marine science, and there are some shells, and I can't remember the names of them, obviously, that would be surprising, but the word Maori is in the Latin name for the shells. So obviously they can import. In fact, they have to, because Latin is otherwise a dead language. They have to make up and import words for the scientific naming systems. Where else are they going to get them from?
Yeah. And science is a place where more Maori scientists are speaking into and looking and saying, well, actually, hang on a minute, that has no relevance to kumaraho. And so there's this, it's sitting right there at the face of going through a change. And yeah. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Did you also want to talk about your classes that you're running? Because you've got one tomorrow.
Yes, I do. Well, I think we've covered that.
So we should remind people because we're coming up to the end. So
yeah. Let's so tomorrow at 9:30, it's for beginners to advanced. And it's an opportunity to meet with others who are passionate about learning the reo, but particularly to look at the kaupapa of Matariki and Puanga.
Yeah, so this is the way I understand your classes is you're learning Māori language, but it's in a context.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely.
And that always helps for remembering the new words.
Yeah. At the Old School Dance Centre at 9:30.
9:30 in the morning.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're doing that for how long? How many weeks?
Till the end of the term, end of the school term.
Okay. And I've got no idea when that is, but a few weeks away.
Yeah.
Hey, folks, we've been talking to Ngā Rongoā Renata, and it's the Kairongoā segment. And thank you for coming in this morning. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks.
Kia ora.